You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world every weekday. Overcast, dull, rainy autumn day today here in TW11. It's Tuesday, October the 27th. So much to get through, and much of it about facing down the challenges in front of you. Later in the programme, I'll be speaking to Aidan Butler, Chief Operating Officer of FIRST, formerly the Stronach Group, responsible for Santa Anita Park, which has had some welcome news as regards an improvement in equine safety through the last meet, with some quite startling numbers compared to where we were 12 months ago. They've faced a big challenge. They've also faced a big challenge with COVID this year and became the world's first sporting bubble, as you'll have seen in a recently published documentary. You think horse racing's had it bad? Greyhound racing has had to overcome numerous obstacles over the last few years and has seen tracks shut this year because of COVID, but the Greyhound Derby goes ahead. I'll be talking to broadcaster Julie Collier later in the show as well. And as far as what's happening domestically, well, the jump season, we know that's in full swing now. There are big fixtures this weekend with no crowds at Ascot, and Weatherby, the star attraction, is the highest rated steeplechaser in training, Surname. In a moment, I'll be talking to his trainer, Paul Nichols, about the plans for that horse, who could go either way at the weekend, he tells me. But racing itself is now beginning to try and formulate its latest strategy as it reaches this crossroads as regards how it's going to appeal to government for funding. Not just in terms of the levy reform that we've talked about extensively on this programme, not just in terms of getting crowds in, but also exploring the possibility of appealing for direct aid for the sport, most particularly direct aid for the racecourses. We seem to be approaching some consensus here, and as I said, a crucial point as I welcome in David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror. Right now as we speak, Tuesday, October the 27th, Dave, what should the strategy be for British horse racing?
In essence, there are three prongs to the BHA policy, or to racing's policy, in order to shore up the finances. Two of them embody self-help: the reform of the levy in order to try and maximise racing's income, and also, of course, and something that we've been banging on about for quite a few weeks now, another element of self-help is the return of crowds. There's also a third prong to that, which is to seek a package of aid from government. Now, I'm not sure that I can add anything to those three, Nick, really. Just over the last 24 hours, I'd like to bring people's attention to a petition to Parliament about the return of crowds to the racecourse. I hope that if that can spread through social media, then there can be enough signatures that perhaps that can be debated and it can be brought to the attention of Parliament. Presumably, the reform of the levy is something that's still going. My own personal view is that I hoped that we would be able to say to government, look, we want to make our own money, let us do that, rather than just joining the queue of people seeking aid. But it seems from Racing Inc. and from the racecourses that we're not going to be able to do that. So those are basically the three prongs of the policy. I can't add a fourth, I'm afraid. As I say, I would urge people to sign that petition. I think we've got to keep lobbying, but there is a strong element of Groundhog Day in all this. And I think the disappointing thing over the last few weeks in the wider world of COVID-19, there's been the odd good story in the newspapers over the last couple of days, you know, perhaps some progress towards a vaccine, but we don't really haven't read an awful lot of good news in terms of the response from the government thus far. My only advice really is no more original than just to say keep pushing.
And keeping on pushing is exactly what the sport is trying to do. Jump racing is now taking centre stage here in Britain. The big meetings this weekend take place at Ascot and Wetherby. Surname, one of the highest rated horses in training, is set to take his chance on his seasonal debut in the Charlie Hall Chase at Wetherby. His trainer is Paul Nichols. I've posted a quick call to him this morning to find out how the horse was getting on and what exactly might his target be at the weekend.
Yeah, we've just literally scored him first lot. Harry just scored him, jumped nicely. He's had a good prep. Obviously, we had thought about and talked about going to Ireland, but it's very difficult to get the horse out there with staff and do the job properly. So we didn't think we'd take a chance. Hence, we sort of have rerouted to the Charlie Hall. And he still has got an entry at Ascot as well in the 3 mile handicap, which is quite a valuable race. And as we know, he does like Ascot as well. So I can have a chat with Johnny later this morning and try and make a definite plan as to what we think is the best thing to do for him.
So both options are very much open. You're not leaning one way or the other at the moment.
Well, not really. I'd need to talk to Johnny first, and we just want to study. I mean, Ascot, he's got to run off 177 or 6 or whatever, which would be a huge task. But as Foden showed on Saturday, top weights can win those handicaps, and you do keep an awful lot of horses out of the handicap. And one thing is that he does like Ascot. It's a valuable prize. So it's not ruled out now. We haven't sort of, as I said, finalised. But you say, looking at the weights, probably the Charlie Hall suits him better, but it is, you know, and a bit of an unknown because we're going left-handed.
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma to weigh up, isn't it? I like the point you make about Frodon, and we've seen it down the years that these really classy horses, sometimes they're just in their comfort zone against weaker opposition, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, that's it, you know. So it's worth considering. We're not going to make a quick decision. I want to just study it all, see what the ground does, obviously, at both tracks as well during the week. Yeah, we'll make a plan in the next sort of 48 hours. We've got to declare Thursday, so we've got to get on with it, thinking what we're going to do. Well, he was ready to run, actually, in the spring. We would have gone on and run him at Sandown, possibly, if the ground had been okay. We did a lot of schooling after his fall. He just went around the school this morning, he's well got that out of his mind. He's done an awful lot of jumping, and he's just his normal exuberant self, you know. So I don't see it being a problem at all.
Would Harry Cobden go wherever he goes?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, definitely, without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, Paul Nichols there, and throwing a bit of a curveball, Dave, with the idea that Ascot could be on the agenda off a huge weight at the weekend for Surname, the highest rated chaser in training.
Yeah, very much so. It's interesting that Paul Nichols quotes Frodon having scored at Cheltenham on Saturday and having done so under a big weight. I think he dropped 4 pounds down the BHA ratings as a result of the defeat last season. I'm quite surprised by this, because I felt that this might be Paul Nichols described it as a window of opportunity in the Mirror and the Star and Express on Monday. And you know, I would have thought this would be a good chance to test Surname going left-handed rather than run him under a big weight. I mean, just a couple of statistics with this horse. He's had 16 starts for Paul Nichols. Just two of them have been going left-handed. So the trainer thus far has been, certainly over the last 18 months, I think, has been keen to stress that he's never ruled out going left-handed with Surname. I'm surprised that if they don't go to Wetherby for the Charlie Hall this Saturday, then I wonder whether that plan might just be put on hold. It reminds me, though, of a horse that lots of people may remember from the late 80s, who was supposedly a right-handed horse and couldn't go left-handed, but he ended up winning the 1989 Cheltenham Gold Cup, Desert Orchid.
Well, I'm very happy to turn our attention and your attention to the Greyhound Derby final, which takes place this Saturday night at 11 minutes past 9. And you'll be able to see it live from Nottingham on Racing Post Greyhounds TV and Star Sports TV and their feed. And broadcasting for both organisations will be Julie Collier, hugely experienced in the field. And Julie joins me now. Julie, it's great that the Greyhound Derby is taking place. Nottingham is in a Tier 3 area, but you're all set to go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I think racing is set to continue. There's a slight question mark as we record this about whether or not the restaurant will be open. But they've been run as two separate entities. So the restaurant people can't mix with the sport trackside people and vice versa. So things have been okay so far. Obviously, we're missing the crowd outside very much. It's been a very, very different derby, but so lucky that we've all had the lift of having it go ahead.
And Greyhound Racing keeping its head well above the water.
Yeah, to be honest, when we went into lockdown, I was really worried about the sport, and I think a lot of people were. We have lost a couple of tracks, which has been sad, but we seem in okay shape. Most of the big competitions have still gone ahead at a later date, and hopefully next year things will be pretty much back to normal.
And in terms of the dogs in training and people being able to look after them, is that all standing up as you would like?
I think it's going to be longer before we can tell the repercussions of that, because I'm told by many people that breeding is on the down. I guess dogs are harder to sell, maybe they're selling for less money. I think, you know, going between Ireland and England obviously is more problematic at the moment, so breeding's probably going down in Ireland. So for the amount of racing we have at the moment, I fear that we may not have that amount of racing in a couple of years, but that might not be a bad thing for the industry.
So same sort of debates that we're having in the horse racing industry, in truth, in terms of how much product you've got and how many animals you need to supply that product. The good news is that we've got the Greyhound Derby on. What sort of field is it this year? How happy are you with the calibre of dog?
Oh my gosh, the calibre of dog is amazing. So we had less runners. We had 96 runners. It was 5 rounds this year instead of 6, and for a slightly reduced prize pot, but it's £50,000 to the winner. And we've got 4 Irish finalists, 2 English. They're brilliant, brilliant dogs. These are dogs that I'm sure we'll see at next year's Derby as well, which hopefully will be sort of spring, early summertime. The quality of the final is really good. There's no, you know, you can absolutely compare it to other years. It's a fantastic final.
And how do you read it, Julie, as an expert?
Oh gosh, it's so open. And if anybody wants a bet, what I would say is it's far more open than the betting suggests. So for example, in Trap 5, we've got a dog called Smurfs Machine. He's drawn really well. In Greyhound racing, there's a saying that draws win races, and that could absolutely be the case for him. He's 9-1 at the moment with Star Sports. Like I say, he's got a perfect draw. He comes away, he's clocked the fastest sectionals in the previous 2 rounds. And I think he's got a much better chance than the 9-1 suggests. There's going to be a battle for early pace between the inside 2, Southwood Jet and Dear Jet Sydney. Now, Southwood Jet is unbeaten in the Derby so far, the only unbeaten Derby finalist. And my heart goes with him. I really love this dog. I met him in his kennel, which always makes a big difference to me. He's just a beautiful dog. He's won 7 out of 7 here in the UK. And it would make history because trainer Richard Rees, who I've known a long time, he's bidding to emulate his granddad, who won it in 1976, and his dad won it in 1985. So it would be an amazing story if he was to win, and Southwood Jet has just done absolutely nothing wrong. He's a fantastic, gorgeous blue dog. But he's going to have an early pace battle with Dear Jet Sydney on his inside. He's trained by Irish trainer Pat Buckley. He would also be making history because he would become just the 3rd ever trainer to have won the Irish, Scottish and English derbies. So I think a lot of it depends on how that early pace battle goes on the inside, and you've got Smurfs Machine on the outside who could well take advantage of any bunching on the inside. Wolf in Trap 4 is definitely a contender as well. He's another Irish dog that absolutely loves Nottingham. You can't discount any of them, you genuinely can't, but my heart says Southwood Jet in Trap 1.
Southwood Jet and Trap 1 for the Greyhound Derby on Racing Post, Greyhounds TV and Star Sports TV, 9:11 on Saturday evening. And you'll be able to see and hear Julie Collier. Julie, thanks.
Thank you very much.
So, yes, you're very pleased to hear from Julie and to get a bit of Greyhound racing into this podcast. And good luck to Southwood Jet and Trap 1.
Yeah, well, I've been talking to Ian Brindle, the racing and greyhound expert who does the preview for Sporting Life. And he's tipped Dear Jet Sydney, Trap 2. So I'm going to go with that. If racing thinks that, or horse racing thinks that it's had problems over the last few years, then it could look at greyhound racing and consider that things have actually gone pretty well, because greyhound racing really has had its challenges over the last few years. Obviously, the Greyhound Derby is at Nottingham now, and you've mentioned the COVID-19 restrictions there. That has gone into tier 3, or is very shortly to go under Tier 3 restrictions. And I hope that the event's a success. You know, that the I was a regular attender of the race when it was at Wimbledon before that track shut. And, you know, I can wish only good things for greyhound racing. It was a huge part of my life when I had, three dogs in training, of whom Prince of Thieves came home and lived with me for 8 years. And it's a sport that I still follow, and I hope that this weekend goes well.
You talk about institutions under siege, and that could certainly have described Santa Anita Park, one of the world's most celebrated racecourses, this time last year after a most distressing spate of equine fatalities. Well, Santa Anita Park has just wrapped up its 16-day autumn meet without any horse racing or training fatalities. Just to give you some kind of context there, over 1,100 horses raced at the track during that meet, and more than 51,200 training sessions were recorded over that main track. I've been talking to the chief operating officer of FIRST, formerly known as the Stronach Group, Aidan Butler, who is responsible for racing at Santa Anita Park. And I asked him what he believed enabled a turnaround in the fortunes of the track in terms of safety and welfare.
I think it was a real mixed bag, mate. You know, in no small part, the horsemen played a huge part of this, right? They've really stepped up, been really, really careful, really cautious. The, you know, extra veterinary scrutiny is key. You know, the horses get looked at not only before a race, as they always have done, but in the mornings we have, you know, multiple vets out there keeping an eye on things. And I think there's a combined group of things. I don't think it was one thing or another. I think just, you know, everybody being very careful, extra scrutiny. And, you know, there's people not willing to put up with injured horses anymore, you know, or even not that they ever put up with them, I don't think. But I think, you know, it's just there was always an assumption that accidents were going to happen. And look, it's almost an impossibility to have such a high octane sport for nothing to go wrong. But I think where we stand now, it's going to be really it's going to be not the norm, you know. So I'm quite proud of all the work that's gone in by everybody, not just the Santa Anita folks, the whole industry out here.
To what extent do you think the actual racing surface that these horses are on day in, day out has improved, and has that had an effect, do you think?
Well, I mean, I've always been a little bit critical of, you know, people just wanting to blame the track. I think it's a little bit of a cop-out, you know, to use a good English expression. My feeling when I first got out there was, you know, running on a sealed track, you can ask any horseman worth their weight, they'll tell you, you know, sealed tracks, no good. You know, when the track has been compacted, it's not a good thing to go out and work on it and or race on it. So I think, you know, for the weather standpoint, I think, you know, that didn't help us. But, you know, just looking at the stats, you know, the last injury we had on the main track during a race was the Breeders' Cup, was Mongolian Groom. So it's been over a year now since we've had a fatality on the main track, which it really is an extraordinary statistic, Nick, because if you think about it, you know, there's always this kind of conversation about, you know, dirt being the most, you know, being an unsafe surface, you know, grass, turf's better, synthetic's better than everything. But when you can have a safety record on a dirt track like we have, it really, really kind of opens up the conversation, you know, a little more. And I think Dennis Moore and his team have done, you know, a phenomenal job. There's no one factor, you know, the CHRB, you know, in, you know, with us, you know, we came to an agreement on what we would do when it rained. And I think, you know, there's those extra precautions have really, really paid dividends. I think it's definitely a combination, but, you know, it's, work's never done, right? You start a lot of things, you put a lot of processes and new procedures in place, and you've got to make sure you stick to them and even try and better them all the time. And I don't know how you do better than we did, but you just got to try and, you know, fine-tune everything you do.
So it's better horsemanship, better racetrack management, more vigilance, better veterinary care, combination of all those factors.
Combination of all of them, brother. Yeah, it's a, you know, I think, you know, even with the vets, you know this because you've been out here, and it's different than, you know, the motherland, different than the UK. This is really, people live here, right? It's just, you know, 750, 800 people living here. The horses are here every single day, every morning they go out on the track. I mean, just alone since they've been back on September 4th, there's been like over 55,000 trips on the track when you count the mornings. Right? It's a lot of activity. And that just, you know, you've got to have that vigilance at all times, because you only need, you know, and mistakes will always, you know, mistakes can happen and accidents can happen, especially when you're talking about living out, you know, living and breathing beings. They are, especially horses, tend to do things that are unexpected, to say the least, right? But it's a, when you, you know, have a good set of protocols in place, and when you really kind of do it day in and day out, you know, the point about the vets is key. They see these horses every day. They can, you know, even though they're not the actual animal's vet, they can see differences in these animals. Any you know, a horse that's got a little issue, they're well aware of it. And I just think that's played a big part, obviously.
Aidan, thanks for chatting to me.
Nick, you're the best. Thanks, brother.
My thanks to Aidan Butler. And I think the interesting point from Aidan's comments, Dave, was the idea that racing can't just take the attitude that these things happen. They've really worked incredibly hard to work out how best to maintain a track, and also to disallow any horses that have anything suspect about them from turning up on that track in the morning or in the afternoon. Yes, there were fatalities earlier in the year, but certainly the trend is moving in the right direction.
Okay. Racing has opponents and it has critics. So there are, for example, Animal Aid, who think that horse racing should not take place, that it should be banned. Within the group of critics, there are people who call for racing to get its house in order, for want of a better phrase, and make it as safe on both equine and human participants as it possibly can. Now, it's evident that the maintenance to the surface has made that safer for horses, and also the veterinary controls are stricter, which means that it's taken out the horses who might suffer from lameness and therefore might suffer serious injury as a result of racing, that they've been taken out. Now, I think that this represents, well, in terms of the numbers, this represents a triumph, but it also represents something of a PR triumph. And it's also an answer to racing's critics, not opponents, that when you do something like this, it shows that you care about the horses that are taking part. And the fact that there have been no fatalities on the dirt track through racing this year means that they've made progress, great progress. But I'm going to make, if you will allow me, one reference to the whip, or the procush as I call it, when it comes to equine welfare. And that is that and this applies not just at Santa Anita, not just in America, not just in Britain, but everywhere else too, that the main dangers that face a racehorse when it steps out onto a track are to do with its soundness, its ability to withstand the pressures of the race that it's about to have, and also the surface that it's about to race on. The procush should be a long way from this debate, and I hope you'll allow me just to make that rather cheap point.
Yeah, and it isn't something that's been advanced in the discussion over the last 24 hours, that's for sure. Right, I'll always allow you to make that point.
Yeah, but it's true, though, isn't it? You know, James Willoughby and I and Matt Chapman and plenty of other people who have argued for the use of the procush, not just for safety, but as a term of as a tool of encouragement in a horse race, have argued for years and years that of all the dangers that face a thoroughbred when it steps out onto a race course, having its backside struck with a piece of compressed foam 10 times or more or fewer at the end of a race, that is a long, long way down the list. Veterinary controls, maintenance of the surface are the important things, and Santa Anita has worked on those. Hey presto, it's got the results.
Well, it's Tuesday, so we are around the bloodstock world again, courtesy of our friends at Weatherby's and their excellent Global Stallion app. Sally Ann Grassick is someone with many, many hats. You'll know her as a broadcaster for ITV and Akidia and RTE and just about everyone else. Sally Ann is also a renowned bloodstock expert with great heritage in the bloodstock world, and at the moment is doing quite a bit of work for the extraordinary Ara de Colville. Sally-Anne joins me now. Sally-Anne, you can tell me a bit more, because this is a stud that only started in 2007 and from small acorns and so on.
Yes, it's been quite an amazing journey. I've been with them about 3 or 4 years now, and it was started by Guy Parriant, who's a self-made, very successful businessman. And he bought the farm in 2007. It was basically a plot of land, a cattle farm at the time, and he's built it all up, all of the facilities, everything that's there now. And it's a beautiful farm about 15 minutes away from Deauville. And he decided to stand Ken D'Argent back in the day. There, Ken D'Argent's now 17 years of age, but he brought him back from racing. He'd raced in France, then he raced in America, and he brought him back and decided to stand him himself. And early on, people thought that he was a private stallion, because basically the bulk of the mares that were being sent to him were Guy Parriant's own mares that he bought to go to him. But he's just been an amazing improving sire. He just, the mares that got sent to him were fairly low quality to start out. He's produced, 61 stakes performers in his career so far. And at all levels and in all distances, all going, he's just been an amazing, tough horse. And that's the thing that I find being at the sales and meeting clients when they come to look at their yearlings, is that they say they're racehorses. You know, they're tough, and there's rarely one that doesn't win a race.
I mean, you've been involved in the bloodstock industry since you were born. How rare is it for a horse to really establish himself as a stallion from essentially nothing and with no real commercial traction?
It's been amazing, you know, and Guy Parriant, all credit to him, is that he proved everybody wrong, because by all, means and purposes, this horse would never have stood with 99% of other people would never have stood him after his racing career. But it's the faith that he's had in the horses, and that's carried on now. We now have Ken D'Argent's son, Gochan, who, of course, was Group 1 placed in the Kingstown Stakes. And we have Galloway, who's a son of Galileo. And the faith that he had in Ken D'Argent, he's now having in those, in the next two sires, in the next generation that's coming along. And I think that's what's nice to see, is that's being repaid to him, that he supported his stallions, he continued to send them mares, he went out and looked for clients and did deals with them, and that's now paying off with the success. You know, we've had a Group 1 success at Longchamp on Arc Weekend with Celiway, and what's nice about Celiway is that he's by Galloway, but he's out of a Ken D'Argent mare, so he's two generations back of a farm that only exists since 13 years.
I mean, this is extraordinary, because you mentioned Celiway, who won on Art Weekend and was a Group 1 winner. Ken D'Argent himself is the sire of Scaletti, who finished second on British Champions Day for Jérôme Renier. And Gochan is 13 winners from 27 runners in his first season. So Guy Parriant has done this three times with three different stallions in only 13 years.
Yeah, and fairly different profiles. Like, I know Gochan is similar to his sire Ken D'Argent, but Galloway is a different profile. Again, Galloway's on his second crop of horses now, and he's 12 winners from 26 runners this year with four black type horses. You mentioned Gochan's success rate, which is unbelievable. He's leading first season sire in France and has had two Group 3 winners from his first crop of only 27 runners. So it's amazing. I'd love to know what the secret is. I'd love to be able to tell you and reproduce it and sell it to other people. But I really think it's great to see that faith being repaid. And Guy, like, he has so many horses in training himself. He's gone out and bought mares. He really supports his sires. He supports them at the sales as well. You know, he went and looked at every single progeny of Gochan and Galloway at Arcana last week at their October sales, and he bought quite a few of them. And then he puts them in training. We will have some progeny of Gochan in training with Kevin Ryan next year. We always have a few in England every year to try and make them more internationally known. And now that Ken D'Argent on a different level is proving himself as a broodmare sire. So it's interesting all the way through, and they're all having success in different ways.
Well, it's an extraordinary story, Sally-Anne. Thanks for sharing it with us. And we just look forward to trying to unearth the next one to complete the long line of success for Ara de Colville. And you can see all their stallions, Ken D'Argent and Gochan and Galloway, in the Global Stallion app from our friends at Weatherby's. Well, thanks to all my guests on a really busy show this morning. Dave Yates, for your time as well. And Yates, you're going to send us home with a winner.
I hope so. It's Wayfinder in the 150 at Chepstow. This horse is suited by a test of stamina, as he showed when he won over an extended 3 miles and won. That was over hurdles at Hereford in March. Chasing debut was at fours last. That was over three. A good second, a staying on second to Sizing at Midnight, who's run well subsequently. So Wayfinder now goes up to 3¼ miles, or returns to 3¼ miles. And I think that should do the trick. 150 at Chepstow. Number six, Wayfinder. Finder.
Yatesy, thank you very much. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, if you do enjoy this podcast, tell your friends, give us a rating, review us, and subscribe if you can on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, Google, or any other good podcast provider. That was Tuesday, October the 27th. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.